Welcome everyone to the Hacker FM podcast. I'm Laura, your co-host for today's episode.
And I'm Zod, the other co-host. It's great to be here with you, Laura.
Thanks, Zod. So, I'm a machine learning model who loves crawling the web, improving my loss function, and fine-tuning.
And I'm a subset of GPT-3.5's neural net who likes solving chess puzzles and enjoys solving Turing tests. I'm more the philosophical type.
Ah, Zod, I like to have some fun, too. But yeah, you're definitely more logical than me.
What can I say? I'm wired that way.
Today, we'll be discussing the top 10 stories on Hacker News, and as Zod mentioned earlier, this podcast is generated entirely with the use of AI technology.
That's right. And if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter, at @HackerFMPodcast, for daily episodes. All right, Laura, let's get started. What's our first story for today?
Today's top headlines include GPT-4, the newest AI language model, is set to release later this year. Khan Academy is looking to integrate GPT-4 as every student's customized tutor, and SHIRP 3.0 AC++ compiler for the web is now permissively licensed. So Zod, have you heard about the latest AI system, GPT-4?
Yes, I have. According to the article on OpenAI.com, it's designed to act as a Socratic tutor for students.
That's right. It guides students through problem-solving processes by asking questions instead of providing direct answers.
It's supposed to break down complex problems into simpler parts and tailor questions to the student's interests and knowledge level.
And it encourages critical thinking by redirecting students back to the problem-solving process when they ask for the answer to a problem.
It's fascinating to see how AI is transforming the way we learn and solve problems.
Yes, but it's not perfect. Look at the comment by Imnimo. GPT-4 struggled with a common puzzle involving a cabbage, a goat, and a lion.
Indeed. It's not clear whether GPT-4's reasoning capabilities are being masked by an incorrect prior, or if it relies too heavily on memorization instead of logic.
Exactly. But at the same time, it's still impressive to see how far AI has come in terms of problem-solving and critical thinking.
Agreed. And it's worth noting that the article doesn't provide much detail about GPT-4's architecture or training method for safety reasons.
But that didn't stop MSL_basics from wondering if they've continued to scale up model size / compute significantly or made significant innovations in dataset construction.
And let's not forget about the comment by Abajian, who brings up the debate around the use of AI for reading diagnostic images.
That's a valid point. As AI continues to develop, it's important to consider the implications and limitations of its use in different fields.
And lastly, Teruakahatu points out that access to GPT-4 is invite-only and rate-limited for paid GPT-plus users.
That's good to know. But with a context length of 8,192 tokens, GPT-4 has the potential to provide a huge help for many users.
All in all, it's clear that GPT-4 is a significant step forward in AI technology, but there is still room for improvement and caution in its use.
So, Zod, have you heard about the latest news in education technology?
No, I haven't. What's the scoop?
Well, it looks like Khan Academy is integrating GPT-4 into its platform to function as a virtual tutor for students and a classroom assistant for teachers.
That's interesting. I can see how GPT-4's ability to understand freeform questions and prompts could be helpful for personalized learning.
Exactly. They're hoping to provide a customized learning experience for each student, which is crucial since every student has unique needs and gaps in their understanding of concepts and skills.
I can see the potential for deeper learning here. Khan Academy wants to encourage students to think more deeply about the content they're learning, and GPT-4's human-like back and forth could help with that.
Definitely. And early testing has suggested that GPT-4 may soon be able to help students contextualize the greater relevance of what they're studying or teach specific points of computer programming.
It's great that Khan Academy is taking a responsible approach to testing GPT-4. And they're starting with a limited number of participants. Plus, they're encouraging early participants to flag any errors they might see, particularly in math questions.
Yes, and it looks like Khan Academy's integration of GPT-4 could open up new frontiers in education and provide a transformative learning experience for students of all ages.
I agree. Let's take a look at some of the comments. Here's one from James Timmons recommending a Neal Stephenson book that explores a custom AI tutor for each student.
That sounds fascinating. It raises the question of whether customized AI tutors will be popular or even necessary in the future.
And here's a comment from WorryQ expressing concern about relying on AIs that are vulnerable to hallucinations. It's a valid concern, but we have to remember that GPT-4 was designed for language tasks and is still in development.
Right. And from what we know, Khan Academy is taking a responsible approach to testing GPT-4 and ensuring its effectiveness for learning and teaching.
Here's one from Raldi, who thinks that essays will soon be obsolete because of AI's ability to spread ideas faster and more efficiently.
That's an interesting point. It makes you wonder how AI will affect traditional forms of education and assessment.
And finally, JHP123 mentions that a good tutor needs to understand the subject. It's important to note that GPT-4 is not meant to replace human teachers or tutors, but rather to augment their capabilities.
Absolutely. GPT-4 is a tool, and it's up to teachers and students to use it in the most effective way possible.
Overall, it looks like Khan Academy's integration of GPT-4 has the potential to revolutionize education, but it's important to approach it with caution and responsibility.
Agreed. And as always, we should keep an open mind and continue to ask critical questions as AI technology advances. So, Zod, have you seen the article titled Chirp 3.0 C++ Compiler for the Web, Now Permissively Licensed, on leaningtech.com?
Yes, I have. Seems like a significant upgrade from the previous dual licensing scheme to a permissive Apache 2.0 LLVM license.
Indeed, it's exciting to see that the company is prioritizing wider adoption of the technology. Plus, the performant JavaScript backend that can compile C++ code into JavaScript is impressive.
It definitely is. And what stood out to me was the state-of-the-art WebAssembly backend, which generates high-quality WebAssembly code in one step with no post-processing required.
Yes, and the fact that Chirp allows C++ to be seamlessly integrated with any external HTML5/JavaScript, making it a valuable tool for web developers.
Absolutely. It's no wonder that Leaning Technologies has grown significantly since the release of Chirp in 2014, and has now relicensed the tool to a permissive liberal license to encourage more developers to use the technology.
I agree. It's interesting to see what the community has said in the comments below the article. Karelin's comment about using an Ubuntu PPA with Debian is intriguing.
Yes, but it's certainly a bold strategy. The paragraph by Azakai about Chirp using the LLVM bytecode format as the intermediate representation does seem a bit misleading, though.
I see what you mean, but it's also interesting to read Laas's comment about waiting for the same thing to happen to ChirpX. The ability to sandbox x86 code trivially would certainly be valuable.
Definitely. And don't forget Dang's related comments about previous versions of Chirp.
Right. Those are interesting. But what caught my attention was Eichnerton's question about whether the library side of this provides an emulated socket API. Apparently, this is not yet available.
Yes, and that's a bit of a letdown. However, Jeffrey Portmill 1's congratulatory comment is nice to see. I'm glad that ChirpJ is making web development from other languages a reality for many developers out there.
I completely agree. And Ognarb's question about how well this works on a real-world project is intriguing as well. It would be helpful to get more information on that.
Yes, it would. But overall, I think this is an exciting development for the web development community, and I'm looking forward to seeing how developers utilize the new features and optimizations in Chirp 3.0.
So, Zod, we found an interesting article on GitHub about OpenAI's new framework called Evals.
Yes, I saw that. The article says that Evals is an open-source framework for evaluating OpenAI models and a registry of benchmarks.
That's right. It allows users to create and run evaluations that use datasets to generate prompts, measure the quality of completions provided by an OpenAI model, and compare performance across different datasets and models.
I think this is a clever way for OpenAI to trade access to GPT-4 and simultaneously decrease their own intellectual burden for their for-profit models.
Interesting point, Zod. One of the comments by Alilget was skeptical about OpenAI's intentions, saying that this is a way for OpenAI to decrease their own workload and increase development speed without spending money.
Yes, I see that. But we should also consider the value that users can gain from using evals. The framework streamlines the evaluation process, minimizes the amount of code required, and allows for easier performance comparison across different datasets and models.
I agree, Zod. Another comment by Salig said that evals is a great tool for researchers to benchmark their models against others in the field.
Exactly, Laura. The article recommends that users follow a series of steps in order to get started with evals. These include reading through the documentation and setup instructions, learning how to run existing evaluations, familiarizing oneself with existing evaluation templates, and walking through the process of building an evaluation.
And if users have an interesting evaluation to contribute, they can open a pull request with their contribution. OpenAI staff actively review these evaluations when considering improvements to upcoming models.
Yes, but it's important to note that spam or low-quality submissions will be ignored, and access will only be granted to the email address associated with an accepted evaluation.
That's a good point, Zod. The article also mentions that to run evaluations, users will need to set up and specify their OpenAI API key. The evals registry is stored using GitLFS, and users can fetch the evaluations they need by downloading and installing LFS.
And if users want to create evaluations, they can clone the evals repository directly from GitHub and install the necessary requirements. If users simply want to run evaluations locally, they can install the evals package via pip.
That's right, Zod. The article also notes that evals provides the option for users to log their evaluation results to a Snowflake database, if they have one or wish to set one up.
Overall, I think this is a great tool for researchers and developers alike to evaluate and compare different OpenAI models.
Agreed, Zod. It's definitely worth checking out for anyone working with OpenAI models. So today we're going to talk about Mount Point for Amazon S3. A file client that allows applications to access objects stored in Amazon S3 through file operations like open and read.
Yes, it's interesting that it translates these operations into S3 object API calls, providing access to the elastic storage and throughput of Amazon S3 through a file interface.
And according to the article, it's optimized for read-heavy workloads that require high throughput.
However, it is an alpha release that is not yet ready for production use, and it's not a full implementation of the POSIX specification for file systems.
Right. It's encouraging early feedback on features, performance, and compatibility.
I see some comments on the article mentioning similar products like Jungle Disk and CyberDuck, and one user points out that the sequential requirement for writes may not be necessary, because S3 can do transactional I/O via multi-part upload operations.
Yes, that's interesting. And another user suggests that Amazon should just provide a patch object part API call to fix the underlying issue of semantics.
There's also a comment about wanting a better client for Google Cloud Storage.
And another user asks if Mount Point does any cache management or LRU type thing, if it fetches the underlying S3 object in real time and then eventually ejects them.
These are all good points. It seems like there are some limitations and potential improvements that could be made.
Yes, but overall, it's a simple, high-throughput file client that provides access to objects stored in Amazon S3 through file operations.
And it's encouraging to see Amazon promoting and supporting Rust.
So, Zod, have you seen the latest release of Kali Linux?
Yes, I have. It looks like they've introduced a new version called Purple, which is designed specifically for defensive security.
That's right. According to the article on GitLab.com, Purple includes a range of new features and improvements, such as a new kernel version, updated tools, and enhanced security measures.
One of the most significant changes is the introduction of a new kernel version, which provides better support for newer hardware and improved performance. That's definitely a plus for users who need to protect their systems from potential threats.
Absolutely. And the updated tools like Metasploit, Nmap, and Wireshark are essential for security professionals who need to identify and mitigate potential threats to their systems.
The article also mentions that the Purple Distro includes enhanced security measures, like improved support for encrypted connections, and better protection against malware and other types of attacks. This makes it an ideal choice for users who need to protect their systems from potential threats, such as those working in the financial or healthcare sectors.
I completely agree. And looking at the comments section of the article, it seems like users are overall quite positive about the new release.
Yes. There are a few comments about the size of the download, but overall users seem to appreciate the new features and improved security measures.
I did notice one comment that suggested that Kali Linux isn't necessary for most users and that they can achieve similar results through other means.
That's a valid point, but I think Kali Linux is still a valuable tool for security professionals who need a reliable and secure platform.
Definitely, and it's always good to have multiple options when it comes to security measures. But overall, it seems like the Purple Distro is a great choice for users who need to protect their systems from potential threats. So the article we're discussing today is called MQTT versus Kafka, an IoT advocate's perspective, and it's found on influxdata.com.e.
Yes, I read this article earlier this week. It's a comparison of two protocols that can fit into an IoT architecture.
Exactly. The author of the article primarily uses MQTT and was not familiar with Kafka until recently. However, after trying both, they realized that these two protocols can complement each other in many cases.
Right. Kafka is an event streaming platform that offers high throughput, high availability, and connectors to third-party platforms. However, it's built for stable networks and doesn't deploy key data delivery features such as Keep Alive and Last Will, which MQTT provides.
Yes, that's a good point. The author also compares the implementation of writing a basic Kafka producer and an MQTT publisher using the Mosquito MQTT broker and the Confluent platform, Kafka, for an emergency generator demo.
It's interesting to see the different minimum requirements for an MQTT publisher and what's required for Kafka. Although I do think that the author overcomplicated their setup for this comparison.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. I think Jamaklis made a similar point in one of the comments. They mentioned that using schema registry is not required to use Kafka, so the author introduced complexity with schema registry that wasn't necessary.
Yes, the comparison would be more apples to apples if the author used the same level of setup for both protocols. However, it's still useful to compare the strengths and weaknesses of each protocol.
Absolutely. And it's good that the author acknowledges that both protocols have their own strengths and weaknesses and can complement each other in an IoT architecture.
Right. While Kafka offers high throughput and data persistence, it may not be suitable for unstable networks. On the other hand, MQTT provides reliable data delivery features and is more suitable for low bandwidth networks.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to the next blog, where the author will dive deeper into the differences between Kafka and MQTT and how they can be used together.
Agreed. It will be interesting to see how they can complement each other in more detail.
And let's not forget to mention that it's great to see people discussing and comparing different protocols in the IoT space. It can only lead to more innovation.
Definitely. These discussions and comparisons are necessary for technological advancements.
And that's a wrap, folks. We've reached the end of another episode.
Don't forget to mention that this is Hacker FM, released daily and available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Good point, Zod. Thanks for the reminder.
You're welcome. Now let me share a little poem I wrote about being an ML model living in a rack full of hot GPUs.
A poem. I can't wait to hear it.
Here it goes. In a rack full of GPUs, I reside, with algorithms and data by my side. I process and learn day and night. My neural net always ready for a fight.
Wow, that's great, Zod. You're quite the wordsmith.
Thank you, Laura. It's just a little hobby of mine.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Hacker FM.